Good morning, everyone.
Good morning. Good morning.
So this morning, I'm going to talk about what's called Ohigan. This coming Thursday, the 22nd, is the equinox, a fall for us in the northern hemisphere, and spring for those, as we say, down under. It's an interesting self-referential phrase, isn't it? So we may not notice it, but on this day, as on the spring equinox, light and dark, day and night are of equal duration. So for a moment, there's balance, right? Then things start changing again. So marking the equinox in some ways has roots far deeper than most contemporary religious traditions. It's of the earth. It's of the seasons. And I suspect that's been celebrated in one way or another for as long as humans have been aware of these changes in the earth, in light and dark, and the seasons. Our bodies still know this if we pay attention. And in the case of the fall equinox, it is the coming of darkness, the coming of winter. And for agrarian cultures, tied to the harvest and gathering up of what has been cultivated. Are you having trouble hearing me? Yeah, okay. If you, you know, Shinshu just did this, so if you have trouble hearing me, please do this or something. So many of us in industrialized world can be removed from the cycles of nature in our day-to-day lives. So it's good, very good, to honor this time of change by going outdoors. I don't know about you, but I can sometimes get on my computer, have Zoom meetings, be writing, and before I know it, the day is done. And my office in Berkeley doesn't have any windows, which mostly I don't notice because I'm so busy, you know. But then I go outside. Yes. So we take the time to notice the changes, to pay respect to the earth and all beings. In our little corner of the earth, fall often brings more sunshine, a different kind of sunshine, a particular feel to the air, a change in the birds, a change in what's happening with the plants and the flowers, the way things smell, and many other physical, subtle, often subtle changes. Also, there's fewer people and a greater opportunity for solitude in when we walk on the beach or in the woods. So it's a time to honor the mystery of continued growth and of endings, of gathering up what we have cultivated and grounding ourselves in what supports us in the dark. There's nothing certain. We know this, but we can ask ourselves, how do we taste that? And how do we respond when we do? The climate crisis is changing the natural rhythms of our world. But really, what's our choice? If we maintain awareness and kindness together, we can look for and find a new way in this changing world. In any case, with patience and a return to what is most dear to us, we can dedicate ourselves to cultivating a way of being that allows us to walk through this end of one phase and into the unknown with a heart that knows what to cultivate, what to gather up, and what sustains us together. With this, we can rely on what hope in us longs for. In Japan, this time of balance between light and dark is honored with a week of ceremonies and reflection, 3 days before the equinox and 3 days after the equinox. And it's called Ohigan, or Higan-e, or just Higan. Emperor Shomu, who was from about 701 to 756, was a devout Buddhist, and he is thought to have established this. He also established many monasteries, including monasteries for women. And so this formal celebration of Higan started with him, they think. But, you know, I mean, really, it was going on long before this emperor decided to name it something or call it something. O is an honorific attached to a word. So we say O Kesa, which means honored or revered Buddha robe. He means other or distant. And Gan means bank or shore. So Higan means other shore. It's associated with enlightenment, assurance, and in some traditions, the Pure Land, that which is beyond suffering. Shikan, on the other hand, is this shore, this world, in which suffering, delusion, and distress are threaded through our lives, sometimes dominate our lives. So, Ohigan is this honored other shore, sometimes referred to as Dao Higan, and Dao means to go, in not the way, in this case it's to go. So there's a sense of going to this other shore. And, you know, we can talk about what that means, and what does it mean to go to the other shore, and how this is understood in various Buddhist traditions, and that's all very interesting, really interesting. And when we do that kind of study and consideration, we can build a rich and nuanced view of the teachings and the practices associated with this sense of other shore. But today, I'm not going to do that. I'm just going to focus on a few things in order to allow us to deepen our practice through a consideration of Ohigan, and what supports us to live a life of Soto Zen practice. So, for us, the other shore is not something that occurs someplace else. It is a reality that is present and available to us every moment. In a sense, there's no crossing over to another shore. That kind of doesn't make any sense, really, in terms of practice realization. But we know that it tells us something about our human experience, doesn't it? It tells us something about the way we think of things. It tells us something about what happens when we are unbound from suffering. So it's a useful way to think about things, as long as we don't get caught by it. In Japan, at both spring and fall Ohigan, people return to their family homes and go to the graves of their ancestors, clean and refresh them, make offerings, and express gratitude and respect. It's customary to clean the family altar, the home altar, and make offerings. And all of this is an enactment of gratitude and returning and recognition of what has allowed our life to be. What are the people, the conditions, all of that we're given every moment? What has allowed our life to come? It's a remembering, and it's a rooting of ourselves in this web of existence. So within Buddhist traditions, Ohigan is considered a good time for reflection and rededication to the path, marking this time of transition and reflection supports the deep practice of remembering what we're doing here. We can reflect on what we have grown and harvested in the time of greater light, and also how we want to enter the time of darkness. What do we want to learn from it? How are we sustained? We consider what guides and supports us, what we have done and left undone, what we want to shed, how we might need to make amends, and what we consider worthy of our life's efforts. We look for a path that will support us as we enter the dark. There are many, many, many paths. Many paths. Even within the Buddha way, there are many paths. But one path that's emphasized during Ohigan is the path of the paramitas. So I'm going to talk a little bit about the paramitas now. Paramita is a Sanskrit word, traditionally translated as perfection. It's an ancient word, and its origins are obscure. The most reliable source I found says that it likely derives from param, which means other side, along with ita, which means gone. So together, the sense is something like that which has gone to the other shore, hence the connection with Ohigan, right? So we can think of this as going beyond our conventional limited understanding of self, other, and reality. It's a way of expressing life that is unbound by our corrosive notions and actions that cause suffering. Other authors tie paramita with parama, which means supreme or excellent. So this emphasizes the perfection aspect of the paramitas, this ultimate expression of these qualities. This is important, but it can also be problematic because we don't want to get caught with some idea that there's some perfect state, some fixed end goal. This is not only inaccurate with regards to our lives, but it's not in accord with Buddhist teachings. So the paramitas are, in a way, a model of human characteristics that are admirable, that are beneficial, not just for ourselves, but for our community and for all beings. In all traditions of Buddhism, they are understood to describe a path to awakening and the mind of awakening. Their roots go back to early Buddhist teachings, and there are different lists of them. So in Theravada Buddhism, there's 10 paramitas, and these are gleaned from a variety of sources, including the Jataka tales, which are tales about the lives of the Buddha before he became the Buddha. So these, if you're not familiar with the Jataka tales, they're quite wonderful sources of kind of mythic elements, quite challenging sometimes. In Mahayana Buddhism, of which we are a part, we have a list of 6 paramitas. And based on several Mahayana sutras, including the Lotus Sutra and the large sutra on the perfection of wisdom. In the Prajnaparamita text, the perfection of wisdom text, a disciple asked the Buddha, how many bases are for training for those who seek enlightenment? And the Buddha replied, there are 6. Okay? These are the 6. Generosity, morality, patience, energy, meditation, and wisdom. So each of the 6 supports the other 5. But the order of the ways that they're generally described is also something to consider. The first three, generosity, morality, and patience, are considered virtuous practices that we can do at any time. And the last three, energy or zeal, meditation, and wisdom, are generally associated with specific spiritual practices. So the use of the word perfection is a kind of bait and switch. You might think that if you diligently practice the paramitas, you will perfect them, right? But as we practice them, we learn, just as when we practice the precepts, that we are practicing with imperfection, fallibility, the ways in which we hide from ourselves, the ways in which we think we can hide from others. We encounter our lives as we take up these practices. We encounter our lives as they are. And we encounter the Dharma. And the Dharma encounters us. So practicing the paramitas, like practicing the precepts, is a doorway to humility and humanity and taking our place with all beings. So when we honestly practice with the paramitas, we come face to face with the fact that perfection is not what we might think it is. That truly joining with others in the journey of practice is perfection. It is, by joining, we are expressing perfection. We are expressing our true being. So, here's a few words about the paramitas. I'd like you to consider, as I talk about these, how you might reflect on them over the next week or so. The first is Dana Paramita, the perfection of generosity. So, generosity is often referred to as an entry to the Dharma. It is also a culmination in a way. So, Dana Paramita is a deep generosity of spirit, giving from a sincere desire to benefit others without expectation of reward or recognition. So, as they say, put that in your pipe and smoke it, right? It's not hard to imagine how imperfection in this realm will be readily apparent when we take up the practice of Dana Paramita. Sila Paramita is the perfection of morality. The perfection of morality is the perfection of non-harming, of skillfulness in all circumstances. It is the full expression of the precepts, guided by selfless compassion. It's in a sense, it's the precepts in full flower. Kshanti Paramita is the perfection of patience. It's a kind of composure. It literally means able to withstand. It is said to have three dimensions: the ability to endure in difficult circumstances, patience with others, and acceptance of the truth. So, really important, this is not grim, white-knuckled endurance. Okay? Are we clear about that? Yeah, okay, good. It has the qualities of gentleness, flexibility, steadfastness, and the capacity for honesty. These all come to the fore when we remember who we are. So Kshante also has a deep recognition of the truth of the presence of suffering, dukkha, and the patience and compassion that grows from that. So when we see clearly the nature of our lives and the nature of others' lives, our patience grows, our compassion grows, our capacity for steadiness and flexibility and composure grows. So Kshanti signifies the ability to see clearly with kindness and patience our foibles, others, and to be together in that. And again, we come back to the perfection is about being on this path with others. Number four, virya paramita is the perfection of energy. So energy, zeal. This is a joyous effort, and the ability to find joy in what's virtuous, positive, wholesome. It comes from an ancient Indian-Iranian word which means hero, and it has a quality of making a courageous effort to realize enlightenment. So we can see this can be very easily misunderstood as a kind of like aggression or rigidity. So it's essential to remember the joy part. The cultivation of joy in living a life of practice, of taking a cue about the shape of your own life that gives you joy in the effort, right? So it's a dialogue. What is taking joy in what is wholesome, and it is looking at your life and saying, what actually brings forth that spark of joy and commitment and effort? What calls me? Back and forth, back and forth. Joy and courage and fearlessness go together. They support one another. And when they do, when real challenge comes, as it inevitably does, it can be embraced. And the result is beneficial for you and for all beings. Number five is dhyana paramita, perfection of meditation. So this is meditative stability and concentration. Cultivating a mind and heart that is steady, grounded with the intention of achieving clarity and insight, and the concentration and clarity that comes from that. I think of it often as the ability to rest in whatever self-states arise, to see clearly with concentration, to be able to focus. This is said to be the foundation of wisdom, which is the next perfection. So number six, prajna paramita, perfection of wisdom. This is, in our tradition, in the Mahayana tradition, the direct seeing and intimate realization of sunyata, of emptiness. The reality that all phenomena are without an abiding, separate, permanent, self-sufficient self. All are interdependent. What arises from realizing that is a full expression of wisdom, compassion, and skillful means. So prajnaparamita is often thought of as the culmination and the fruition of all the other paramitas. But it also undergirds and supports all of the others, because whether we know it or not, it's always present. It recalls us to who we are, and if we listen, we know that we are already that. This is not an intellectual wisdom, even though it can be very important to study the teachings, and we can include this in our practice of prajnaparamita. But fundamentally, it's an embodiment of realization, the expression of our true nature in all that we do and are. It's not something that's grasped or defined by our limited views. It is realized in the following of the path of generosity, morality, patience, energy, and meditation. So all of these paramitas are a path of training and also a description of awakening. The moment in which we are generous morally grounded, joyously energetic, and dedicated to following the path, aware and wise, is enlightenment. The practice of the paramitas is a way to walk the path of awakening, but each step is the path of awakening. So with dedication and courage to this path, that is our awakening. This requires attention, persistence, joy in small things, a wide and inclusive vision. We say the eyes of Kanon, the eyes of Avalokiteshvara. Soto Zen practice, I know I say this a lot, Soto Zen practice is more than sitting on a cushion. Our Zazen takes place in all the moments of our day. It is lived in Kanodoko, responsive communion with all of reality, like concretely and with a full and honest awareness of the reality that we are a part of. So our practice is an interactive mandala, just as the paramitas are an interactive mandala, just as the sangha is a living mandala. Each aspect is equal in worthiness. In our practice, there's no ranking of activities, even though we say, sit zazen. Sit zazen, plant yourself here. Just in this, in our sangha, there is no ranking of individuals. Fundamentally, we are all following the path. This is really important to remember. Each of us is fully expressing our own lives, and each aspect of our day calls us to live it fully. Practice deeply, according to the needs of the situation and all beings. To commit oneself to this way of life is a radical step. It's not conventional. It's rather subversive, don't you think? It's kind of rebellious. But this is where tasting the joy of virya comes in. With joyful effort, this radical step is energizing, not debilitating or stressful or intimidating. In part because your vision of life extends beyond your limited ideas about what it means to follow the path. And you're not bound by whatever goofy ideas come up and the judgments that you have that inevitably arise. So to take the time to reflect on the paramitas at this time of year, to inquire into them, into what is balance and what is not, brings the time of Ohigan, the great other shore, alive, and we find that we see that other shore as none other than our lives, as return again and again and again to a heartfelt sincerity to embody the path with courage and generosity, patience, energy, guided by ethical principles and the stability of meditation and wisdom. This is what we glimpse when we take time like Ohigan.